And my mum, bless her, she stayed right until I left the hill. I was hoping she would drive away and I could wave and she'd go and then I could sit down and catch my breath. But no, she was there the whole time. Every time I turned round, she's a little dot on the horizon with her blue coat waving. It's like, oh, mum, please leave. This is embarrassing. I can't make it up these steps. I don't think I can do it anymore. I'll just find a bench and maybe get a train home. This is too much.
Welcome to the Distance Hiker Podcast. This is the first episode of 2023. Really great to have you here. I am a bit late for this episode, as you may have noticed if you are a regular listener, really because I fancied slowing down a little bit more than I planned over the new year. And honestly, like being really upfront with you, I didn't fancy getting back onto my computer and spending a significant amount of time in front of the screen after the first week back at work. So I kind of just had a bit of extra time away from the computer, away from Distance Hiker, and it was great. It kind of fits in with my new year, new me kind of thing I've got going, which is to really do less this year. And by less, I mean just not kick around and do nothing, but it means not rushing around trying to do everything, being slower, more intentional, looking after my kind of physical and mental well-being more, and really trying to focus and hone in on those things that make a change for my life, so that make I kind of push the needle forward, rather than trying to just juggle everything and shooting off in all different directions like I have a habit of doing. Especially in 2020, I did a lot of that. But duty calls, and I have a podcast to produce. I have this obligation to you, the listener, you enjoy the show, to bring you guests, and I love doing it. So I'm back here behind a microphone recording an introduction and introducing a brand new guest for today's show. So on today's episode, I have got Emma, who is a coast walker, who is actually currently taking a break from walking around the coastline for a few months, which was, of course, a great opportunity to grab her for a little bit to chat about her progress so far and the backstory of her walk and find out who she is, what she's about, and what she's planning on doing in the future. And we pretty much covered all of those boxes. And this is a really fun episode. It was really silly, which is kind of unusual for my episodes. I like to think that, and not intentionally, but I can be quite serious sometimes, and I'm aware of that. But Emma was really good at bringing out my giggly side. So we had a laugh. It was really fun. She goes by My Legs Hurt on Instagram, and her website's the same. I think it's mylegshurt.co.uk. Should have written that down. I'm pretty sure it's .co.uk or .com. But if you go to my Instagram, search for My Legs Hurt, you'll find her on there. And it was really cool to learn about her story. We kind of spoke about her motivations or lack of motivation to do the walk, which really made me laugh. She didn't really have a reason for starting it, which is so unusual. Bunch of the challenges she's faced and perceptions of people kind of from her doing the walk, the kind of kindness of strangers, which is a recurring theme that comes up in these kinds of interviews. And we spoke about what her future plans are and a speculative idea of what would a book look like if she wanted to write one. So this is a really good podcast. It's got loads of little gems in it, and I think you're going to love it. So without further ado, I would like to introduce you to episode 31 of the Distance Hiker Podcast with me, your host, Matthew, and my guest, Emma. Enjoy the show. So I found out about you, I think it was through Instagram, ages ago. And I think, I can't remember where I think your post must have been shared by somebody or it came on my feed. And I was like, oh, there's another coast walker. Because you started during or after lockdown?
Well, I started before lockdown, and I got about 5 days in. I remember going to a cafe in Lulworth Cove, and I was talking to the girls that work there, and they were like, "Yeah, lockdowns." This was before lockdown. They were like, "Yeah, we haven't had any guests in days. You know, everything's really quiet. We might have to shut up shop tomorrow." And then I was like, "Well, if all the cafes and all the pubs are going to close, where am I going to go to charge my phone?" So I had to like move back in with my parents, and then that next day official lockdown was announced. So I was like, "Phew, good timing."
So that was that the first lockdown in 2020?
Yeah. So yeah, had
that's
time
great.
To.
So you started. I thought you started later than that. So that's really interesting. So. You started, when did you start then? What was the kind of date you set out on the walk?
I don't know, Matt.
Roughly, like throw a month at me, or like a season. Doing, some summer like, of somewhere.
Summer. Yeah, it was hot. The sun was out, yeah. So it must have been summer, yeah.
Summer 2019 then.
Yeah, I should know this. Yeah. It just sort
of... Don't worry, it's fine. I think the last few years for everybody have sort of merged into one awkward mess of time-space continuum where
it's been a really
no
weird
one knows
time.
What's going on. I'm the same. That's cool. So a while then, so it's not a new thing. So you're walking the coast, and I think when I first came across you, what I really liked actually was your website, because it was just really, really different, and it was funny and it just made me laugh. And I was like, this is cool. Like, my legs hurt. Like, great. That's an awesome name for a coastal walk. I think at that point I followed you. What really struck me is that on your website, you didn't have two things. You weren't asking for sponsorship, which was really unique and definitely not a bad thing. But also, you didn't really have a reason, at least on your about page. So you can mention on the page that you didn't really know why you were doing the walk. Now, as somebody who's been in the lucky position to speak to a bunch of coast walkers now on the show, one commonality that they all have is they have a reason. And the fact that you didn't, I found really curious. Now, I wondered if that has changed since you started. Like, looking back, do you think you had a reason to do it, or was it just on a whim and you just fancy doing it?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I guess it felt like on a whim. It was quite a spontaneous decision to suddenly tell everyone, right, I'm going to walk around the coast of Britain, because they're like, Emma, you don't like walking, you don't like hiking, you hate camping, you're not outdoorsy. Why do you want to do this? And I was like, why not? But I think it was, I don't know. I was like living and working in London. So basically I had a good job, but like all of my pay was going straight on rent and our ground floor flat. I was a graphic designer, which I really enjoyed, but it was a lot
really
of
good site.
Thank you. Yeah.
That makes sense.
But yeah, it was just a lot of staring at screens all day, and then going back home and staring at more screens, and our flat didn't see the light of day. It got no sunlight because it was surrounded by other high-rise flats, and I just thought there's got to be more to life than this, than just staring at computer screens and working. And yeah, I was just a bit, I just wanted to be, yeah, and it was a grind, and I just wanted to sort of feel like I was living my life a bit more. So yeah, I was like, oh, I'll walk around the coast of Britain, that'll be an adventure.
Were there something any other ideas that you had, or was that something that sort of just came to mind? Did you have to have a think, or did you trawl through guidebooks or kind of look at a documentary? What was it that gave you that particular idea?
I genuinely have no idea. I mean, there must have been something. The only thing I can think of is sometimes, I don't know whether you do the same thing, but sometimes if you're like on the bus home from work or something and you're just like staring out the window. I mean, I used to do this all the time as a kid. I'd imagine there's like a little person doing parkour alongside the bus and like walking along and running along. And then I was just like zoning out, and I was like, why don't I just go on a really long walk? Like, because people say, you know, walking's good for your mental health and your physical health and everything else. So if I do that, I'll be the most mentally, physically healthy person out there, hopefully.
So I want to know, has that idea come? Like, how's then the walk left you feeling? And I'll rewind back because I've got a few more questions about how it started. But sort of, has the idea that you become mentally and physically healthy, has the walk helped with that? In particular,
oh, yeah,
the feeling,
like,
of de-stressing from work and London life?
Yeah, no, it's been incredible. I think just having even just like a few days of not having a routine and just being totally in tune with your environment to the point, you know, especially when you're camping, so you're really looking at nice potential camping spots as you walk along. And I think just being in green spaces, like, there's all this science that's coming out now that, like, proves basically just being nearby water or woods or anything, nature, away from, you know, these like artificial city blocks we've made ourselves, because, you know, we're animals and we sort of need that link with our natural world. And I think it's, yeah, I think a lot of our sort of mental health issues, not maybe not a lot, but a lot of things can be put down to, you know, the environment we're living in. And it's just good to sort of break away and sort of, you know, listen to the noisy bloody oyster catchers gobbing off on the beach sometime, or like find a weird mushroom and be like, oh wow, is this like the beautiful tasty gourmet mushroom, or will it kill me? I don't know, I've got an app, I'm gonna look it up. No, I probably shouldn't risk it. But just have being you, more
have, yeah that's
yeah I've eat,
that's
I haven't, across, I haven't eaten any deadly poisonous mushrooms yet.
That, have you tried anything yet? Have you sort of chanced any sort of foraging as you
yeah well I got like I was with a couple of girls who had worked as chefs before, so they sort of knew their mushrooms. And one day I was like, oh, that's a pretty mushroom, and they were like, bloody hell, that's like, what was it, the golden, I keep calling them golden chanterelles. I know they're not golden chanterelles. Golden.
I know chanterelles are edible, and that's probably about the is it chanterelle or chantelle? I don't know.
Chanterelle.
Yeah. Somebody will be on the other end of this listening, going, "It's that you're getting it wrong." Yeah, those ones.
But yeah, there was
the really nice ones. They're sort of peaked, kind of tops, and they dip in beautifully. And it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we found a shit ton. We found
you can swear,
an
don't
awful
worry. It's, I put twisted okay. on it anyway. It's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good. Yeah, we found a heap of them. I found a heap of them. I was like, oh, look at those pretty mushrooms. And they were like those in the restaurant business. If you bought a bag of them to like a kitchen, they'd pay a fortune.
Yeah.
I was like, oh wow. And I gobbled them all up, and they were delicious. And that then was... since then. Every
the
time
right
I see a mushroom
things to do, yeah.
And every Rather time I see a mushroom now, I'm like, yeah. Is this a good one or a bad one? Or so I've got proper into mushrooms.
Fortunately with mushrooms, there is only a small window of the year where you can actually kill yourself, because the rest of the year you don't see any. So that's kind of the
that's
benefit
true, yeah.
of being into mushrooms. So have the whole of the year to kind of think about it. So I just want to go back to the pre-walk, because that I didn't know that bit about your story, that you're kind of working in London and doing a stressful job, and that was kind of the catalyst of what decided to make you do something completely different and sort of wipe your slate clean, essentially. Now, from the point of sat on the bus and going, I could just do a walk, why not? How long was it then between that point and when you decided just to buy stuff and go?
Oh, it was quite quick. I tend to be quite spontaneous with my major life decisions, like quitting job, moving country, things like that. I don't really leave myself time to think it out. So really, in that sense, having lockdown was quite good for me, because I had a trial run of 5 days to realise the cheapest possible gear I bought last minute wasn't actually really up to the job. Like my coat off Amazon wasn't even waterproof, which is what it's like the bare minimum you would expect from a coat. But so it's good. Had a little trial run, saw what it was like.
So it was only 5 days on the trail then before you had to sort of return.
Yeah, tail between my legs back to my parents. Yeah.
Okay, great. That's interesting. So you set out with them fairly minimal preparation. I'm assuming you sort of, did you have an idea of the route? Because I know a lot of long distance walkers who do the coastal walk, there's, as you mentioned on your blog, there's this whole kind of hoo-ha about, Oh, how long is the coastal walk around the UK? Is it 2,000, 3,000 or 5,000 miles or something, based on whether you decide to walk into every river and cross over at the nearest available bridge, or whether you decide to cut around the artillery ranges, or whether you want to hop across the islands and stuff. Are you somebody, and I think I know the answer to this as well after speaking to you for just 10 minutes, are you somebody who is tracking that, or are you just putting one foot in front of the other and just seeing how you feel each day?
I mean, I've tried to track it as much as possible. The extent of my tracking has basically, I've got like a sort of repertoire of I've got a repertoire of camping spots, because it's all the places I'll text my parents, like a what three words location, because it makes me feel safer and it reassures them. So I've just been using that to sort of plot my journey. And as much as possible, I've tried to stick to the coast, like especially, so there's been like the Southwest Coast Path, which is brilliantly marked, and the Wales Coast Path. Going from the Southwest Coast Path to the Wales Coast Path, a bit iffy, because there's a lot of places which you sort of have to, the England Coast Path is sort of there, and then it just stops because they haven't got permission from a landowner or something. So you're left in the lurch, and then you have to like try and find all these public footpaths, and a lot of them haven't been maintained. So you battle your way through stinging nettles to get to a public footpath, cross over an extremely dodgy bridge, get to the other side, and it's just a field of corn. there's no path. It should be a path. It's marked on the map, and it's like, do I just stomp through the corn? There's like electric like wires everywhere to stop the cows bimbling around.
Oh really,
bits like that. It gets a bit hairy, but it's all part of the fun, isn't it? More of a challenge.
Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of similar to what I've heard before, was, you know, there's some really good bits that are really one way marked, and there's always these patches where they're just not maintained, and that's quite a common theme with, I think, people walking the coastline, is finding those things. Where did you start then? So you started down the Southwest Coast Path for this?
Yeah, initially I think I started it's called Old Harry's Rocks, because I've got an aunt and uncle that live in Poole, so they could like drop me off. And then that's when I did my 5 days and got to Lulworth Cove, and I had to stop. So I restarted at Lulworth Cove. So I'll redo, because I had this idea, I want to do it continuously as much as possible. Like, I don't want to have a break, you know, go back home or wherever. I mean, but at this point, I do need a break, because I would still be on the trail, but just money. Things cost money. Food costs money. Food costs so much money now.
It does at the moment.
When did that happen?
Let's get into that, actually. So you've done, after you went back onto the trail when that lockdown ended, have you walked consistently from that point onwards?
I had a break just outside of Liverpool for 2 weeks, like volunteering at a Buddhist centre. Not for the spirituality, mostly for the tasty vegan food, which was delicious.
Amazing.
So that was nice to have a little rest, but
I want to get to the veganism on trail thing as well, because that's interesting to me. So money, let's go straight into that, because I think it's a question that a lot of people are genuinely interested in, because I think it's easy to assume that when you look at somebody who's walking the coast of the UK, then you must think, oh, well, they got loads of money, because, you know, they're sustaining themselves and not working and walking around the UK. It takes a year. So you've got to have tons of money to be able to do that. Now, again, my armchair experience of this is that that's not the case. So for example, some people I've spoken to on this podcast have had it been in a very lucky position where a house they've owned, which is a kind of, I guess, a more privileged position, has somebody who wants to rent it, and therefore gives them opportunity to move out and to kind of have somebody else in their house while they have a little bit of money trickling in. Other people have retired, which is obviously like a big pool of money where you can just, well, big, depending how much retirement you get, that you can just do this. You've obviously not been in that position. I'm guessing you've had to save for this, and you're at the point where money's now run out for you. What's the kind of general cost per se of, and it's obviously hard to say at the moment because things are going up and down so much, but what's the general cost that you're having to spend on like a weekly or monthly basis to keep this going?
I did have a budget a while ago. I mean, the thing, yeah, a lot of people would assume, oh, you must have heaps of money to be able to do this. I think I started my walk with like $6,000 because I really squirreled away my money. I didn't, you know, all I did was like rent and food and that was it. Like I didn't buy clothes. I didn't buy anything. I didn't get Deliveroos or literally anything. So I properly squirreled it away because I was like, I've always had like a certain amount of like fuck up or fuck off money, which is like if I need a break or want to go to a different country or just do something mad, I've got, you know, the money to do that. But also like when you're like walking around the coast and essentially living in a tent and just eating a hell of a lot of baked beans, I mean, your overheads are pretty low, so
yeah.
it's quite easy to not spend too much money. And then as well, I've just met like some incredible people along the way who will just like give me, you know, 20 quid. And that's like, you know, over, wow. Just give me dinner, give me a place to stay. And
that's, you can buy a lot of baked beans for 20 quid. Going.
You can buy not so much now, not as many as you could last year.
depends on the brand, but yeah, of course.
Every time.
For sure.
Anyone who cares about branded baked beans is lying.
I'm totally with you there. But, yeah, it's one brand or the other. No Aldi brand will do. It's got to be the proper brand of baked beans.
And when you're walking as well, everything just tastes delicious. Like cold baked beans out of a tin is just like gourmet.
Oh, so absolutely with you. When I had my first experience of long distance walking, we did it abroad. It was in Costa Rica, and they had something there which was like baked beans, but it was sausage and beans or pork and beans. Mm. We looked at it like pork and beans. This is disgusting. And for the first few days of walking, it was absolutely gross. Then after a few days, when that becomes your lunch, you're like, oh, pork and beans. I can't wait for pork and beans. Funny how things like that suddenly taste really good. I'm vegetarian now, so I wouldn't be able to eat it. But at the time, I was like, yeah, pork and beans. This is amazing. Trail food is such a weird phenomenon. So you run out of money. So how long are you planning on staying at home for to kind of top up your bank balance to be able to go out and do this again?
Oh, well, I'm in Edinburgh at the moment. I was living and working in a hostel. So basically you work in a hostel which pays for your rent, but still you've got to buy food. So I was just applying for every job. I started being a bit picky with what jobs I was looking at. And then after a month I was like, anything. I need some money. So
have you managed to find anything then at this point?
So I'm just like working in a little sort of supermarket, and it's so I'm just working in a little supermarket. It's not like a mainstream supermarket. It's a little independent one, and it's quite quiet, you know, piping in classical music all day, and you're allowed to just stand around reading your books. So it's pretty chill, which I like.
That sounds all right. That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's minimum pay for minimum effort, which suits me fine.
Of course. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. And then are you going to kind of hang around till after Christmas and then start making tracks again on the trail? You got a kind of rough idea as to when you want to go again?
That's the plan. I mean, I don't want to have to stop and like work and start again. So, I'm thinking like maybe hopefully February, March, I'll be able to get going. And also I think it's going to be, I don't know, I think mentally I'm sort of like, right, I'm homeward bound. I've done like the most northerly point. So now it feels like downhill, and it's a lot flatter and it's a lot less wriggly. So it should not take me as long, but we'll see.
You remind It reminded me of that, I don't know if you've read The Hobbit or watched the film of the Bilbo Baggins saying, oh, I think the worst is behind us. And that's before he's seen the dragon. But I think the worst is probably behind you in terms of the hilly routes. Because, yeah, the good stories always come out of Scotland and Cape Wrath and walking around those particular bits. In fact, it was, as I'd noticed, you met Dan and Charlotte not too long ago. And they're they look like they're in a similar position to you, and they've been on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, where they've sort of need to top up funds as well, and have also just, I think they're going the same direction, aren't they? So they've done kind of top of Scotland, or they did the top of Scotland and then jumped across to Shetland or something like that, and then kind of stopping in Edinburgh
They're doing a lot better than me. They're doing all of the islands. I'm just sort of sporadically flitting over to an island just to have a look around. And then, yeah, I'm not as hardcore as them, unfortunately.
No, they are pretty hardcore. I mean, they've got a three or four year plan. I was quite surprised by that when I asked them. I said, how long are you thinking of doing this? And they said to me, oh, yeah, 3 or 4 years. I was like, wow, that's like a career. That's crazy. But yeah, fair play to them. If that's the way they're doing it in their own way, that's for sure. But yeah, they were really nice. But anyway, I'm glad you guys met, because it's nice to see when the two kind of faces together on these things.
Yeah.
Back to you. So since starting, I've got a couple of questions for you. Have you had any moments where you've kind of gone, why the heck have I done this? Any kind of regrets since you've been doing this, or any moments of kind of feeling like you wishing you were home and homesickness?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird one, because I've had a lot of times where, you know, I've just been peeling off the millionth slug off my tent and it hasn't stopped raining for like 3 weeks, and all of my socks, everything is soaking wet and my tent is sopping wet and the inside is wet and there's midges everywhere and it's just bleak. But I've been like, well, this is awful, but at the same time, I've never regretted doing it. It's a sort of, I don't know, there's something about being in that position, but being in that position out of choice, and it's just a little blip in like this bigger adventure. And I think you need things to go wrong sometimes. Like, if everything went perfectly all the time, you're not going to grow as a person. Like, if you say, oh yeah, I walked around the coast of Britain and everything was wonderful all the time and the sun didn't stop shining and I had a brilliant time, nothing bad happened, like, people sort of, I don't know, I find it, people relate more. For example, if you go on holiday, people don't want to hear about what a lovely time you had and how the food was lovely and the sunsets were stunning and the beach was white sand, turquoise waters. Like, that's boring. Mm. People want to hear the messy stuff, like when you got food poisoning and basically were bedbound for 2 weeks of your all-inclusive holiday. Like, I don't know. I've never regretted going on my walk, because it's, I don't know, just every day has been something different and unpredictable.
Yeah. It seems to me like you're viewing the adversities and negative experiences then you've had, as you've said, opportunities to grow. And that for me comes across in the way that you document it, which leads me on to my next question. Your social media and blog are like a narrative of your highs and very honest lows. And I think that's why I was looking at the comments on your blog, for instance, and you get some really nice feedback. And I think people genuinely appreciate that. Did you set out with this idea of wanting to kind of share your experience of that level of transparency and honesty about this? Because there's no sugarcoating with what you're doing. You're not saying this is experience of a lifetime. You're not trying to be Mrs. Motivator about it. You're just being really honest. Is that something that's kind of comes naturally to you? And is that kind of what you want to get across to people through your experience of documenting this?
Yeah, I guess. I think for me personally, I like reading and hearing about the sort of human side of people's experiences. Like, to be honest, when I read a book about some grand feat somebody's done, I'm not necessarily interested in, you know, beautiful descriptions of the landscape. I want to hear, you know, what they're going through, like, at the time. I want to hear what's going on in their brain and all the weird sort of disjointed ideas and things that are happening. So I guess like that's just how I write. I wish I could do beautiful florally descriptions of the landscape, but it just don't have it in me. I'd rather whinge like, oh, it's too hot, oh, it's too cold, this looks lovely, but there was loads of midges, so it's not. I just love complaining that.
I would say it does not come across as complaining. It does come across as being very honest. I really enjoy it, which is why I wanted to just mention it, because I think it's very different to a lot of outdoor writing that you see, which is, as you say, lots of kind of proses about, you know, the beautiful vistas and sunsets and landscapes, and that writing's really nice, don't get me wrong, but what I enjoy about your blog is that it just has a lot of honesty. And what you just said there as well, it's about the people. When you set out on this walk, were you expecting to come across as much kindness within people as you thought you would? Because that's something you mentioned a few times on your socials.
No, like absolutely not. Like when I sort of started my walk, I kind of had I was a bit burnt out from like quite a stressful low paid job. And I don't know, I was just sort of, you know, I'd read the news and read about the environment, and I just had this outlook that Christ, humanity's terrible, the environment's going to hell in a handbasket, we're all responsible, we're all selfish, this, that, the other. I was quite, yeah, it was quite a really nihilistic outlook on the world. And just when I sort of started my walk, and just complete pure strangers within, you know, a minute of me giving my name's Emma, I'm walking around the coast of the UK, and instantly they're just inviting me into their house. They're like, oh, we've got a chicken, we were going to cook dinner tonight. I'll be like, oh no, don't worry, I'm vegan. Be like, right, we'll change our dinner plans for you then. And it's like, no, you don't have to. I'm right, here's some money, here's a bed, have a shower, wash your clothes. Like, just complete strangers have been so incredibly, yeah, and it's totally, totally flipped my outlook around. I'm like, generally, yeah, people are incredible and generous, and just meeting, I think when you tell someone something you're doing, some sort of adventure or goal or idea that's sort of somewhat out of the norm, it sort of inspires them to open up about themselves. And, you know, I've met like people in their like 80s who have been telling me, oh yeah, when I turned 70, I ran 70K. And it's like, never would have known. Like, I never would have sort of bumped into you. And it's just when you're sort of on a trail, or when you're walking and you just sort of meet people, and everyone's got such interesting stories.
Could you share a few of those, like just pick one or two of those stories, maybe something recent or even not so recent, and kind of share it with me.
Oh my god, Matt, my memory's awful. I'd have to like go through all my notes. I've been doing notes on my phone every day. But
in absent, that's well, actually, that in itself is a really nice thing to do, because when you go back over your phone, don't go and look, it's fine. When you go back and look over your phone, you will have this amazing catalogue of stories, and each note will just jog something. You go, oh yeah, I remember that. And you'll have this kind of,
yeah, you can literally feel the synapses firing, like, oh, I almost forgot about that, but I've written it down last year. So
that writing down is really powerful to remember it. So in absence of you being able to remember anything, which is totally fine, for people listening to this, you have got a blog, and the stories are on there. That's what phones are for.
All of our storage is external now. It's fine. We don't need to remember anything.
Storage, yeah. No, I'm just the same. Yeah, what's my to-do list? That's on my phone. So one thing you do mention on your blog is that you're quite risk averse as well. And that was in particular down to your aversion of eating mushrooms, which made me laugh. Now, some would say that, well, you're female and you're walking alone on the coastline, that's risky, and if you're risk averse, surely you can't be, because that's a risky thing to do. Have you felt unsafe at any point as a solo female walker? doing this?
To be honest, I've had quite a lot of people ask me that, and a lot of people have said, oh, you're really brave to do that, like on your own as a woman. But genuinely, I've felt, you know, the first few nights of like wild camping, my biggest fear is, oh, a farmer's going to come along and tell me off. Like that was it. And then also it's like, oh, there's a spooky noise. What is that? Oh, it's just a bird or a badger, like scrounging around. But like genuinely, I felt less safe, like on some nights out as a woman, like just in like a big city, I felt less safe on my own, or just even with people, compared to just being in the woods on my own in my little tent. And I don't know, I think just life in general comes with some amount of risk. But you know, I've been camping for like over a year, like 450 days or something. And but yeah, no, I think a lot of the fear is like in your head. But and generally, like my mum was sort of saying, like, what if there's a weirdo in the woods or something? And it's like, well, mum, I'm the weirdo in the woods. There's no one else here. It's just me. And like when you're in your tent as well. Yeah, nobody knows who you are. I could have a knife. No one's going to bother me. I could be some massive, burly, 7-foot bearded bloke. No one's going to check. Yeah.
Which is a more likely outcome if you're going to go bother a tent, that without knowing who's in it, that a large, burly, bearded bloke with a knife is going to come out of it. So it's a pretty safe bet in this day and age. Have you had any moments then where this is to kind of quell the wild camping myth that you will get moved on. Have you ever, in the numerous nights that you've camped out, been asked to move on or approached and asked kind of, what are you doing here on my land?
I've never... There's one time a woman walking her dogs was like, hello, from outside the tent. And I was like, can you show your face, because it's upsetting my dogs, they don't know what a tent is. And I was like, oh, for God's sake, I'm in my pajamas, but fine. So I poked my head out, and she was like, oh, just to warn you, the farmer around here, he's like really, because this was on, I think it was on the Southwest Coast Path, and she was he's not happy about what, if he sees you camping, he won't be happy. So it's just a warning. I'm not telling you to move. I was like, okay, great. I'm going to go back to bed. And then another time
take my chances, thanks.
The other time was really recent, actually. It was, Christ, where was it? It was along the Cape, or just after the Cape Wrath Trail, in a tiny, tiny little sort of harbour town, not a lot going on. There was a little bit of beach. There was a sort of unofficial parking spot for, you know, camper vans and stuff opposite. And then there was a lovely little patch of grass overlooking the beach with a bench. And me and my friend, who's she's walking around all the boffies, so we sort of joined forces for a bit.
That's Jules.
We set up our tent. Jules, yeah. We set up our tents there. We were like, wow, this is perfect. The sun's going down, the beach is there, it's quiet. And this American woman came along, and this was in Scotland, and she was like, you can't. She was like, have you got permission to camp there? And I was like, well, no, who do we get permission from? And she was like, oh, nobody. You can't ask for permission. You can't camp there. And like, well, I mean, we sort of know we can, but also don't want to, just can't be bothered with the fuss. And she's like, oh, it's a park, you can't camp here. And what it was a patch of grass with a bench, which I don't think makes it a park, but sometimes it's just like,
so either, but you know,
no,
people's idea of a park,
but that was one
relative,
that was one time.
Yeah, okay. And that's a lot of nights of sleeping out you've had, not had a problem. I think that kind of stuff's really interesting to know, because I think there is a myth, and I think it's getting increasingly debunked, that wild camping is illegal. And it is, as a sort of, what's the word? A public offence, is it, or something? Anyway, it is, but you're kind of not as well at the same time. The landowner can ask you to move on. And I think that's the worry people have, is that the landowner is always going to come marching out with a shotgun and loud, large dog barking at you saying, move on. But I've heard so many stories where that just hasn't happened. There's been so few cases where that actually happens to people. And it's usually when people are just really stupid about it. So no, thank you for answering that.
No, that was genuinely my biggest fear when I started. But the only times farmers have come up to me is to like recommend a better spot to camp on their land, or say the sun's going to rise this way and you should watch out for this, and look, there's dolphins over there. Like, it's been the complete opposite in my experience.
That in itself, that extra bit's really interesting, because it debunks this idea that landowners are sort of, you know, what's the term? What am I trying to say? That these sort of overlords of the land who can control it. And again, if they were, in my experience, I mean, great, it'd be lovely to have kind of free and open access to our landscapes, but we don't at the moment. But I think from experiences like yours and others, it's really nice to know that, and it's not the first time somebody's said something like this as well, but it's nice to know that landowners genuinely, for the most part, don't mind, and will just accept that people are going to camp out where there's footpaths and permissive rights of way through the land. And rather than go out and police it, because who's got time to do that, they just work with it. And I think that's really nice to know that does actually happen. So, So what have been like the best bits for you of the walk? What have been the kind of some of the memories that really stayed with you?
It's so hard to sum it up, because every time I try and think, there's just so many things that have happened. And I think the best thing for me personally has been not knowing what's coming around the corner. Like, I haven't done that much research really. So, you know, if I stumble across this like beautiful secluded bay, I didn't know it was going to be there. So it's a surprise to me. And it's really hard to sum it up, like, or pick one or two moments, because just the novelty of each day, not knowing what's going to happen or who you're going to meet, or whether you're going to see, you know, dolphins splashing along the horizon, or seals sort of, what's the word, what do they do, how would you describe the way seals move?
It's the wrong term, but I would say, I don't know, flopping. I don't know what a seal does. I'm not sure. I know exactly what you mean.
Just seeing like seals flopping out the water and doing their weird woo 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 woo. It's I don't know, there's just been so many. I can't just the whole experience and the people, and I can't pick one moment. There's been so many.
Sorry, I just realised I've left my phone on and I've not put my battery into my laptop. I'm not doing well with this one. You're doing great. Just carry on as if nothing's happened and not under my desk. sorry, I don't usually have hiccups like that. Learn for next time. Maybe I'll do it at 8:30 because I seem to have better experience doing it at 8:30.
So, yeah, maybe this is too early for you.
Yeah, it might be too early for me, yeah. I usually get tired by 8:30 and I find myself trying not to yawn through them even. I'm finding the guests really interesting, but I have experiences where I have a guest on the show, but it's 8:30 and I've just done a full day work before this and I'm really tired and I'm like trying not to yawn, which is the worst thing. So
that's the worst thing, when you try and hold in a yawn and it's really obvious.
Yeah, it's really obvious. You kind of... yeah. That's why it's good this is audio only and not a YouTube channel. So that was probably a bit of a mean question for me to put on you again, because I think with experiences like this, it's always so hard to pick out the top experiences, and those kinds of things are better reserved for sort of listicle articles of the highlights of a particular coastal path or whatever. As somebody who, prior to doing this, as you say, you kind of weren't really outdoors, you hadn't camped or hiked or really done anything like this. First question, was it a shock to the system when you did start doing it? And secondly, were you expecting to find the landscape quite as beautiful as you have done as you've gone through it? Or the landscape, the people and the wildlife?
Yeah, I guess it was a shock to the system, but I guess one I was craving in a way. Like I wanted something different. I wanted a new experience, and I wanted to experience, yeah, new things and see new sights and, you know, get out of my, you know, little routine of staring at big screen for work, laptop screen for watching TV, and then a phone screen until I fall asleep, rinse and repeat, just like staring at smaller and smaller screens until I doze off.
That sounds so dystopian.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah. So yeah, I just need to get away from that. I need to be in the nature and all that. And sorry, what was the second question?
So was it then a shock? I think you've answered my first question with that, but not quite. So the second question, the first question, was it shock to the system? I am thinking like physically, were you prepared for this? Yeah. Was it kind of shock to the system when you started?
Oh my
walking?
God, you've got no idea. Like I was not prepared at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%, because I hadn't really weighed my kit. I was like, right, I'll just bung it all in a backpack and time to go. Hadn't prepared. I got a bit chunky in lockdown, as I think most of us did, with just eating our feelings or drinking our feelings or all of the above.
Yeah.
And so it was really, I remember my mum dropping me off, and there was like this big hill I had to walk up. And I was just, I had my backpack on for the first time. And I was like, Christ, this is like, it's like 20 kilograms. It's really heavy. Do I need like three camera lenses? And do I need like two pairs of shoes? Do I need a kalimba? Probably not. No. And I was just aware of just everything on my back as I walked up these steps. And my mum, bless her, she stayed right until I left the hill. I was hoping she would drive away and I could wave and she'd go and then I could sit down and catch my breath.
Yeah.
But no, she was there the whole time. Every time I turned around, she's a little dot on the horizon with her blue coat waving. It's like, oh, mum, please leave. This is embarrassing. I can't make it up these steps. I don't think I can do it anymore. I'll just find a bench and maybe get a train home. This is too much. But it's crazy how I found it crazy how quickly you do adapt, because I felt like I adapted to, I mean, I obviously sent some bits back home, because I think most people who go on a long hike, you very quickly realise you don't need like a portable shower. You don't need all of these little gadgets and things you thought you'd need. So a lot of stuff got sent home. The load got a bit lighter and... yeah, and it gets easier like day by day.
I think there's a metaphor in that though, where as you lose the kit, so you kind of send things back home or donate things or however people choose to do it, or just chuck it in a trash can as you pass, I think there's a sense of losing that burdensome weight of day-to-day life that you feel you need to carry with you, and kind of replacing it with a lightness that eventually you get down to this kind of optimal weight. And I don't do talking about weight on this podcast and pack sizes and all of that, but everybody does get down to an optimal weight. But that almost kind of happens as a journey at the same time as them sort of learning to lose that kit as well, and that kind of those attachments from home that they don't need until they're at this point where they're kind of comfortable with where they're at on the trail. And then continue from that point onwards with the stuff that they have kind of stripped down to. Meanwhile, they've grown as a person alongside that. And I guess my question to you is, how do you think you have grown as a person since, from when you started to where you are now? Have you got any kind of different perspectives on life and yourself, in addition to obviously realizing the kind of kindness of people?
I guess it's hard to, it's another one of those things, it's hard to kind of recognize. But even when I'm going through some of like my old blog posts or my notes on my phone from like a year ago, I'm like, wow, I was a bit of an idiot a year ago. And I think that's like a growth in itself, when you can look back at your past self and cringe. I mean, that's a really great thing, because it means you're getting better. hopefully.
You've seen the gains and other than that, yourself, which is a good perspective.
Yeah, I'm getting wrinkly as well. So that's another thing I've got going for me. All that sun exposure. I've been wearing SPF, but when you're outdoors really all day, every day.
Yeah. I guess, you know, you probably need to if you are in the sun, you know, regardless of whether you're in the sun or not outside all the time. Because, you know, that is, there's probably not much in your day that you do spend indoors now at all. You're probably just, 12 or more hours just sun exposed for the whole day. Have you noticed?
Yeah, I mean, luckily for me, I had a horrible summer, so it didn't stop raining. Yeah. It was overcast.
Yeah.
Like for 2 months in the Highlands.
I think they call that a blessing in disguise then for less sun lotion. It's not cheap as well. So I just want to get into diet as well. So we're talking about baked beans earlier. Now you're plant-based, and was that something that you were plant-based before you started walking, or you kind of decided to stop consuming?
No, you know, I guess it was another thing over lockdown. So when I started my walk, I was vegetarian, and I think it was during one of mine and my parents' late night drunken debates over, you know, politics, the environment, whatever hot topic was about. We were talking about the environment, and I was like, well, the best thing, if you really care about the environment, the best thing you can do is like reduce your meat intake. Here's a documentary. And I put on this documentary. No, it wasn't. It was Land of Hope and Glory, which is like a sort of UK focused, because a lot of people will watch like an American documentary and say, well, our standards are a lot better. We've got free range eggs, this, that, the other. It's sort of exposing the UK, you know, meat and all of that. And I watched it and I was like, well, I can't. Yeah, I'm a bit of a hypocrite if I say I care about the environment, but I'm not doing, you know, basically the easiest change you can do, which is to reduce your meat intake. I mean, I wasn't eating meat, but like, and that's what made me go vegan. And
has it been a problem on the trail to kind of walk and long distance walk in particular with a vegan diet?
No, I mean, I've managed this long. I mean, it's a bit upsetting when you get to like a little news agent, which is like the only shop for miles around, like miles and miles around, and you're limited to, you know, tinned vegetables and baked beans and a bit of bread, hummus if you're lucky, but sometimes all the hummus is gone. And you walk past all the tasty looking chocolate bars and cakes, and it's like, damn, that'd be really handy to just have like a sugary boost of calories, but it's all got milk and eggs in it.
Of course it has. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. But for the most part, it's generally been something that you've managed without.
Other than that.
Yeah. You've managed it without too many issues.
Yeah.
That's good to know. And I'm assuming then you've also managed, you kind of avoided buying things like what's it called? Dehydrated meals, and, you know, like Summit to Eat stuff and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I found there was like a pub I went to, and they were like, oh, we've got all these leftover meals that hikers, we've got a hotel as well, and hikers have stayed here and got food packages sent here. These are all the things they haven't picked up, so like, help yourself. Yeah. So I had a good rummage through, and obviously took out the only vegan ones, I wasn't that big a fan of them. You can just have like super noodles or rice and a tin of veggies, and it's like cheaper and just easier. Yeah. And it's, you know that at any little shop you go to, the very least you'll be able to get is a packet of rice and some kind of vegetable. So, yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Cool. That's interesting. I think that there's a concern with, I've always wondered if you're kind of, if you have anything other than conventional diet when you're on the trail, is it easy to manage? And I think that your answer to that's kind of answer that question really nicely. So it's kind of good to know it is. So I got a question for you. This is a bit of a different one that I haven't really asked a guest this before. So I'm kind of interested to see if you're able to answer it or not. If you were to write a book about your experience on the trail, what kind of narrative would you, or what, how would you write that book? What would kind of stories would you want to tell in that book?
I have thought about this actually, because I do like writing. And I think I'd want it to sort of be framed in, I'd want it to like take the appearance of a sort of how-to book, like how to walk around the coast of Britain, but interspersed with stupid little anecdotes and bad jokes and silly illustrations. So really useless information, just a sort of self-indulgent piece about what how I did it. I've thought about that. I definitely want to put some silly little illustrations in it though, because that's my joy. And that makes me happy.
What would your how-to be then? Like what would you say in a short summary that your approach of walking around the coastline be or is, sorry?
Well, I guess it's like I've been thinking, because I get asked the same things and the same questions by a lot of people. And like one of them is like, how do you afford it? And why did you do it? And, you know, again, like you asked earlier about like, oh, is it, you know, being a woman on your own? And, you know, how do you, have you ever felt unsafe? What do you do to sort of deal with that? And just a lot of practical things like, oh, how did, like when I was coming up to the Highlands, people were like, how do you deal with the midges? And, you know, there's ticks. I didn't realise ticks were going to be such a ginormous problem.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. It's been so many days I've just sat down for like, for 10 seconds, looked down at my legs, and there's all these bloody blood-sucking parasites scrambling up my legs. And, just things like that.
Have you had any problems with Lyme's disease then on the trail, or have you been actually bitten by one and had to remove any?
Oh, I've had to remove like hundreds of ticks, but luckily haven't got Lyme disease yet, so I'm doing well. Like the chances I probably should have got it, the number of ticks I've had, but what can I say, it's the vegan diet.
What are your plans for the future after you've done the walk? So, and how long do you have left until you're planning on roughly finishing? And do you have any plans afterwards? Because I'm assuming that's going to be quite a difficult bit when you're going to go back home, and then it's like kind of big splash down to reality and what now? Or are you not even thinking that far ahead at this point?
Oh, no, Matt, I've got it all worked out.
Yeah? Oh, wicked.
I'm going
to say. No one says that, but I feel you're lying to me.
No. So it's all worked out. So step one, finish the long walkies, obviously. Step two, now this is potentially going to be the slightly tricky.
This is amazing.
Bit,
you're deadly serious.
Is okay. Win the lottery.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So I need to come into a lot of money very quickly, which once I do that, that can bring me on to step three, which is to buy a little bit of land along the coast, maybe along the Southwest Coast Path, and then I'll have my own campsite. And it will be no camper vans, no caravans, none of that. Just people with like who've walked in with their tents. And also, I watched, you know how like the algorithms just know us by now, like they know what we like and what we want to see. I never would have thought of going on YouTube and searching for 100 guinea pigs. But the algorithm knew I wanted to see 100 guinea pigs on a farm, and they run out of this tube and there's a big caption saying, we don't eat the guinea pigs. And I was like, okay, phew, good. It's just happy guinea pigs. And there's a few chickens that come out the tube and they're all just munching the grass. And then at the end of the day, they go back into the tube and go back to bed. And I was okay. So on my campsite, I'm going to have 100 guinea pigs. I'm going to have some goats to look after the guinea pigs. And then some llamas to look after the goats, because llamas will protect any animal they're with.
Yeah.
So that sounds amazing. That's my plan.
I'm really glad I asked. I mean, the llama is protecting the goats and the goat's protecting the guinea pigs. I mean, that kind of sounds a bit like Animal Farm, the famous novel, but you haven't got the pigs in there, and the pigs were the real causes of that kind of hierarchy of power on the farm. So I'm kind of glad that you kind of excluded them from the farm.
But was it the pigs though? I feel like they were more of a metaphor. I think pigs are lovely.
I thought the pigs were the bad guys on Animal Farm, weren't they? They were the ones who were sort of the... I need to go and reread that book.
I don't think it was an anti-pig book.
No, it definitely wasn't.
I thought it was more like a criticism on like, I don't know, capitalism or something. I don't think it was a criticism on pigs.
No, it was more of how the pigs replaced the humans as the capitalist overlords, wasn't it? But anyway, it's gone a really weird direction.
Yeah, I haven't read it in a while either.
No, I think I read it when I had to at school, and kind of retained inaccurate segments of information from it, which I'm now going to be sharing to 500 people who listen to this.
And it's going about to be, how pigs are evil.
Yeah, how pigs are evil. After we've just spoken about veganism, this might go down strangely. if you're still listening, thank you. Anyway, you don't have a plan for afterwards, which I think is not surprising. I think that's probably the best way to do it.
What do you mean I don't have a plan? I just told you my plan. I'm going to win the lottery.
Apart from winning the lottery, yeah.
That's a plan.
I feel like I might need to send you a lottery ticket just to hedge your chances there. Are you planning on writing a book afterwards about this? Because I think if you wrote a book about this with the illustrations, that would be a really, really good book to read. I'm all for that, and I'm encouraging it right here.
I would absolutely love to. Yeah. I'd love to write a book, but at my current rate of writing, it would probably take me like 100 years to finish.
Okay.
So that would go on the back burner.
Fair enough. But when are you planning on finally kind of wrapping it up and getting back to where you started?
I mean, I think, at this point I'm over halfway, and the sort of stopping at this point isn't really an option. I mean, I'm stopping now just because I have to. I need to make some money. But at this point I'm not going to like half-ass it and be like, oh, I walked around half the coast of Britain, because that doesn't sound as good.
No.
And it's a lot more words.
Yeah.
So.
Of course. You want to finish what you started at this point. You want to do the whole thing. Yeah, for sure. So
for once in my life, I want to finish a project I start.
Yeah. So I had a question as well. For once in your life. Okay. Sounds like me. I'm awful at finishing things I start, which is why I do the podcast, because I never have to finish it. So let's keep on doing it. So a couple more questions. First of all, you mentioned your parents a few times in this, and I'm kind of keen to know, like, how your mum seemed like she was a little bit worried about you when you start, and you send them what, three words, locations each night or whatever, which seems like a really sensible thing to do, to be honest with you. Has your parents' kind of attitude to this and their concern about you doing it kind of changed over the course of you doing it? Because I think the people closest to you are those whose opinions kind of often really matter, especially parents. And I know it would for me as well. Like, has that kind of been a thing for you as well?
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely, you can just go through like our WhatsApp chat history. And especially when I first told people I was going to walk around the coast of Britain, you know, like I said earlier, I wasn't outdoorsy or into camping or hiking or any of that. So everyone was like, yeah, all right, Emma, see you in a week. And I think everyone was just a bit skeptical. My parents maybe included a bit, but I've been walking a while now and sort of proven to everyone, oh, okay, I can be outdoorsy. Look, I can put a tent up and I can battle my way through the elements and clouds of midges and, you know, put a tent up in the pissing rain while it's blowing a hoolie. I can do that. Like, so I think now it's they've always supported me, but it's yeah, now it feels like I've got something to kind of show for it and be proud of, and I'm proud of me as well for once.
Thing is really nice. Did you not feel that sense of pride in what you're doing to begin with? Has that come slowly since you've been doing this?
Yeah, I guess because I doubted myself as well to begin with.
Yeah, it's a really massive achievement, which is why I'm asking. Like, I think it's so easy to underestimate how big of a commitment and how big of an achievement it actually is to do this level of walking.
I feel like as well, because I've just been going day to day, and it slowly adds up. But there was definitely a point where I'd be telling people, I'd just bump into people like along the South West Coast path, and they'd be like, "Oh, where are you walking to?" And I'd be like, "Well, I'm not just walking the South West Coast path. I'm walking around the whole of the coast of Britain." And then they'd say, "Well, how long have you been walking for?" And then I'd be like, "I've been walking for 3 days," and then they'd look slightly less impressed.
Yeah.
But now there's definitely a point I got to where I could tell people I've been walking, you know, 300 and something days, like continuously. And they'd be like, "Wow." Like there was a split, like half of like the strangers I'd meet would really boost my ego and be like, "Wow, that's absolutely incredible. I wish I did something like that when I was your age. You're brave, you're amazing, this, that, the other." And the other half of people were like, "That sounds awful. Why would you want to do that? That are you doing it for charity? No, you're doing it for yourself. That's bizarre. I could never do that. I would never want to do that." And yeah, it's definitely, I've been like mentally counting like how many people have said one or the other, and it is a 50-50 split on half of people who want to do something similar or have done something similar, and the other half are like, "Yeah, no, rather you than me, that sounds shit."
Yeah,
which is interesting.
It is interesting. I flipped that on its head then. If you had crossed somebody before you started who was doing this, and you passed them, if you passed you, if that makes sense, doing this, would you be in campaign where you go, "Amazing, it's super inspirational. I wish I'd done that when I was younger," or, "Oh, maybe I'll do that one day." Or would you be in camp B where it goes, "You know, nice one, sounds shit, good luck"? what kind of camp do you think you'd be in?
You know what? I would be in camp B. I'd be like, "All right, you weirdo. Crack on then."
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's weird actually. I never considered that. Yeah, like a few years ago, I'd definitely be like, "Yeah, that's a really weird thing to do, but all right, fair play."
Okay.
But I wouldn't be like, "Wow, I want to do that. I'm inspired."
Yeah. Okay.
But, interesting.
Ah, cool. I've got two more questions for you. One's a really trivial question, and I'm just interested. You mentioned that somewhere on your blog that you've got a Marge Simpson tattoo on your leg. Is that true? And is there a story behind it?
Yeah,
amazing.
I would show you, but it's a bit higher.
No, it's all right.
So
I don't ruin your thigh to
get my knickers out on camera.
Don't do that. What's the story behind the Marge Simpson tattoo on your leg?
I'm not getting paid for this. So.
Yeah.
It's one of my, it used to be like The Simpsons was like my program when I was younger. It was like the thing I always used to watch.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just really like Marge Simpson. I think she's the best character of all of them. She like makes jokes to herself and laughs and nobody else laughs. And I can really relate to that.
Amazing. That's great.
And I don't know, I just thought it would be funny to get like, because it was a Halloween episode where they all get changed into their Halloween costumes.
Oh, yeah.
And Marge Simpson is wearing like a sort of skeleton onesie. So she gets changed into a skeleton body, but with like Marge Simpson head. And I just really like that image. So when sometimes I go out and I'm wearing a skirt and people are like, "Wow, that's such a cool skeleton tattoo." And then I just lift my skirt a little bit higher. And they're like, "What the fuck? Is that Marge Simpson? That's so weird." And I'm like,
I am. I had to ask that because I saw that and I thought, is that a joke? That's amazing. That's so cool. Really, really.
No.
So, final,
well worth
yeah,
it.
Good. Don't show me.
A small price to pay for eternal happiness.
Totally. So final question. Now, very generic question I ask everybody, but I do get a range of different answers for this question. If you were, to somebody who is kind of not convinced that they could do something like this in their lives, who is in the same position as you, feeling kind of bored, frustrated, and locked into their cubicle at work, what would you say to somebody who just kind of wanted to go and take a risk and do something like this, but hasn't yet done that?
Do it. If it's on the back of your mind, you're only going to regret not doing it. Like, you're going to regret the things you haven't done more than the things you have done. Just save up some squid and buy a tent and bugger off into the woods for a bit. Even just for like a weekend, take a few days off and just be out in the nature and just have a mental reset and just, yeah. I don't know.
Brilliant. That's great.
Is that good advice? That's... Should I be telling everyone to quit their jobs and walk around the coast? Sure. Probably not. The coastline will crumble.
It wouldn't like it. But new slogan of the Distance Hiker podcast, quit your job and go hiking. Brilliant. So where can people find out more about what you are doing, and where's your socials and things like that?
Oh, mylegshurt.co.uk, Instagram and website. And that's
brilliant.
It.
Best domain name ever.
But yeah.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It has been super fun to talk to you. Sorry about the hiccups we've had, including me forgetting to charge my laptop, my phone going, and your volume disappearing completely. And me forgetting
you
the question.
You pulled it off well. Times. Very professional.
Yeah, I pulled it off really well, right out of the bag this time. But it's been really good fun. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
A pleasure. All right. Thanks, Emma.
All right. Bye. Cheers, Matt. Bye.